Deva Sudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the fifth canto, chapter 18, text number 8. And this is a prose, I guess it's called. So that's why it's not written up on the board. So before I chant, I'll chant the Sanskrit. But I'm going to chant it the way I heard it, first heard it, in 1975. At the temple in Manhattan, 340 West 55th, 8th Avenue, at between 3 and 3:30 in the morning. I can't remember exactly. Every morning, you know, for about the 2 years I was there, there was a group of brahmacharis in the room just across the hall from me. And they used to, I don't know when they used to wake up, but I know by probably by 3, by 3:15 in the morning, they were together, and they were chanting this, and they chanted another verse before this, actually, and that was by Sheshika. These were the core members of the group. There was like Pragosh, Vaisheshika, Yada Ganguly, Kavidat, sometimes Kasiram, now Prem Kishore, sometimes our own Suradas was among them, if you, you know, whoever made it up. But they had like a little group, and they'd get up every morning real early, probably about 2:30 or something like that. And by 3, 3:15, they were in that room chanting loud this verse and another verse. And so I remember this verse pretty well. This is the way they used to chant it. Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Jas Tejase Avir Avir Bhava Vraja Naka Vraja Damstra Kamarshayam Randaya Randaya Tamo Grasa Grasa Om Swaha Abhayam Abhayam Apmani Bhuyasta Om Shrom. Louder though. And so I remember I was always asleep. And I would, you know, but this was the alarm clock. I'd be woken up to that verse. And actually, the verse they chanted before that was, it's just coming up, it's number 18 in the same chapter. Om, this was the actual, the wake up. This is the first alarm, you know. Om, Ram, Rim, Ram. Om, Namo, Bhagavate, Rishikeshaya, Savaguna, Visheshaya, Vilakshitatmane, Akutinam, Chitinam, Chetasam, Visheshanam, Charipataye, Sodasha, Kalaya, Chando, Mayayana, Mayamrita, Mayaya, Sarva, Mayaya, Sahase, Ojase, Balaya, Kantaya, Kamaya, Namaste, Ubayatra, Buyat. That was the first verse they chanted. Do you remember that, Archie? Were you in that, on that hallway? Archie was. Oh, no, he was already here in Los Angeles. But, yeah, that was the first verse, and then they followed it up by this verse. So I still remember that to this day. When I was preparing for the class and I saw this verse, I said, oh, this verse. Okay. This sounds familiar, and I remember where it was from. So the word-for-word translation is, we're doing that these days? Word-for-word? Or just... Let's read the translation. Translation is, I offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Nrisimhadev, the source of all power. O my Lord, who possesses nails and teeth just like thunderbolts, kindly vanquish our demon-like desires for fruit of activity in this material world. Please appear in our hearts and drive away our ignorance, so that by your mercy we may become fearless in the struggle for existence in this material world. Purport. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 22, Text 39, Sanat Kumara speaks the following words to Maharaj Prithu. Yat pada pankaja balasa velasa bhakja karma sayam grahititam udgratayanti shanta tadvan narikta matayo yatayo pirudha shrot. Devotees always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus of the Lord's lotus feet can very easily become free from hard knotted desires for fruitive activities. Because this is very difficult, the non-devotees, the gyanis and yogis, cannot stop the waves of sense gratification, although they try to do so. And therefore, you are advised to engage in devotional service, in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudev. End quote. Every living entity being within this material world has a strong desire to enjoy matter to his fullest satisfaction. For this purpose, the conditioned soul must accept one body after another, and thus his strongly fixed fruitive desires continue. One cannot stop the repetition of birth and death without being completely desireless. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami describes pure bhakti devotional service as follows. Anya bilasita sunyam, jnana karmadi anavritam, anukul yena krishnanu silanam bhaktir uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Unless one is completely freed from all material desires which are caused by the dense darkness of ignorance, one cannot fully engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Therefore, we should always offer our prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev, who killed Hiranyakasipu, the personification of material desire. Hiranya means gold, and Kasipu means a soft cushion or bed. Materialistic persons are always desire to make the body comfortable, and for this they require huge amounts of gold. Thus, Hiranyakasipu is the perfect representative of materialistic life. He was therefore the cause of great disturbance to the topmost devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, until Lord Nrisimhadev killed him. Any devotee aspiring to be free of material desires should offer his respectful prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev, as Prahlad Maharaj did in this verse. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pacharine Nivashesha Sunyavadi Pastachade Shatarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pabuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasati Gaudavani Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is adept in playing on his flute, with blooming eyes like lotus petals, head decked with peacock's feather, with the figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, round whose neck is swinging a garland of flowers, beautified with the moon locket, whose two hands are adorned with the flute and jeweled ornaments, who always revels in pastimes of love, and whose graceful threefold bending form of Shyamasunda is eternally manifest. That's just to put everybody in the right mood. Okay, so Prabhupada talks here in this purport about the materialists. They always want to make the body comfortable, and for this they require huge amounts of gold. So I heard something interesting recently about this, the gold phenomena. I was up in Santa Barbara. We were coming back from traveling Sankirtan, and somehow or another, by Krishna's arrangement, we got word that Indradyumna Maharaj was there with Giriraj Maharaj, which I wasn't, you know, aware of. So the devotee who rang me up on the phone for some other business inadvertently mentioned that he wasn't supposed to, but he let it slip out. So when we were heading down, I thought, well, can't pass up this opportunity. So I had the boys with me. I had Ananda Gopal and Bhakti Lloyd with me. So I thought, anyway, you know, for them I should try. Because I know Indradyumna Maharaj a bit. He used to come to New Zealand and Australia when I was there. So I figured, well, you know, if I just show up unannounced, he's not going to be too upset, you know. So anyway, so we swung around there and we went. And fortunately, not only Indradyumna Maharaj was there, but Giriraj Maharaj was there too, which I didn't expect because I'd heard he was going down to coming down here to L.A. to come to a birthday party and a wedding that he was invited to speak at. So I thought, you know, we'll just kind of, he won't be there, and we'll just sneak in there and see Indradyumna Maharaj. Anyway, he was there too, and he was happy to see us. So we were talking a little bit, and I, at one point I mentioned to him, I pointed over, I said to his neighbor, you know, who has a big house. And, you know, I've been there about a half a dozen times to Giriraj Maharaj's place, plus or minus. And so this man had a big house already. You know, and I noticed that he was doing an extensive renovation on the house, making it a lot bigger, maybe increasing it by half as much again, you know, in size. And, you know, like putting on a whole floor up above and extending it with, like, you know, some big... And I thought, I said, wow. You know, I just commented to him. I said, well, wow, what's this guy trying? He's going for the Taj Mahal, huh? And, you know, so he knows his neighbors better than me. It's just an ordinary family. I mean, you never only see a couple cars in the driveway there. It's not like it's, you know, a whole club living there or something like that. So he said, yeah, he said, some people just have a lot of money and they don't know what to do with it. I said, yes, it seems like that. And then he made this, he said, actually, money is a problem. He said, and I said, you know, I paused, I looked at him, I said, what do you mean? He said, well, actually, that's Prabhupada said that. And then he began to relate to us this Prabhupada anecdote. He said, in Bombay, I can't remember what year he said, we were walking on Juhu Beach, and Prabhupada was walking, and at one point he stopped, and he said that. He said to me, looked at us, he said, money is a problem. He said, if you don't have money, that's a problem. He said, if you have money, it's a problem because you're worried about losing it or somebody trying to take it from you. See? And if you have money and then you lose it, that's a problem. And then I added to him, I said, also the one you just mentioned about if you have money and you don't know how to spend it, that's also a problem. So, you know, and he agreed, yeah. So that was, you know, Prabhupada's insight on it, that money's a problem. No matter how you look at it, money's a problem because if you don't have it, if you have it, or if you have it and you lose it, somehow or another you're always in anxiety about it. It's only the devotee, actually. There's only one group of people on the face of the earth that money's not a problem for, and that's devotees who know how to use it in Krishna's service. But for the non-devotees, it's a problem. And but despite that fact, because they're very much attracted to it, but it is a problem. It's always a cause of the distress or anxiety for them. The main theme of this particular verse here is becoming free from material desires. Prahlad Maharaj is praying to Lord Nrisingadev that by his mercy, all desires for the demon-like desires for fruitive activity in this material world can be vanquished from his heart. And he's praying to him to help him drive away the ignorance that is responsible for that. So, and Prabhupada's pointing out in his purport here that in order to be engaged in pure devotional service, one has to become free from all material desires. So, getting back to our addressing this issue and simultaneously getting back to our boys in the 340 West 55th temple there in Manhattan who would chant those slokas. As I mentioned, our Suradas might have been among them. It's no small thing. Just using them as an example, I remember these particular devotees, they were like the green beret of the devotees in the sense that they were Sankirtan devotees. And every morning after they, you know, that was just the beginning of their day. And then from there they would go down to the temple room, of course, be at Mangal Arati, chant all their rounds, read. You know, a lot of them were doing deity worship in addition to going out on Sankirtan. It wasn't like they just thought, well, we'll just go out on Sankirtan and that's what we got to do. We're Sankirtan devotees. No, that wasn't the mood. The mood was to try to cram as much devotional service, every different kind, every different type, as you possibly could, into a given day. So they would be on the altar dressing deities and chanting the Brahma Samhita. And then as soon as they finished with that, they'd be downstairs and serving out prasadam to all the devotees in the prasadam room, and then racing out on Sankirtan, either going to the Port Authority bus station or to the Kennedy Airport or like that, and working very, very hard. That was like a very intense form of Sankirtan. And coming back, taking a shower, maybe just taking a little Mahaprasadam and being at the evening program. And that was their thing every day, day in and day out. And generally they take one day off a week to do their laundry and, you know, catch up a little bit on the rest. But, you know, these devotees, as fully engaged in devotional service as they were, and as sincere and intense as they were, among those ones that I named, you know, there's only one like full-on survivor. That's Vaisheshika. I mean, everybody else has had some difficulties. So the point I'm wanting to make, not to diss those devotees and all in any way, shape, or form, but is that I think if a devotee is wanting to become free from all material desires, you're going to have to be prepared to make it a pretty high priority, because it's no mean feat. You know, that's been my observation, that very serious, very talented, competent, I don't know how else you describe them, people who, you know, who are very, like, focused together and determined, who I've seen people in that, you know, of that description, how would you say, approach that, this objective, you know, but not be able to be successful, at least in the short term. So it's really like a great accomplishment. Somebody can become free from material desires. We don't see a lot of devotees being, you know, able to become fully successful doing that. So as I said, it's if that's our ambition, to become free from all material desires, we have to be prepared to make it a very high priority in our life, possibly the only priority. I think Srila Prabhupada was perhaps an example of that, somebody who had as his exclusive priority just to not become free from material desires, but to please his spiritual master. And that's, I didn't make that point yet, but that's the point I'm going to make. That's the way to do that is, you know, the only way to become free from all material desires, as described in that verse Prabhupada quoted from the Srimad Bhagavatam, is to, this is Lord Rishabhdev instructing his sons, he says, therefore you are advised to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudev. And in the, some Prabhupada gives a translation like that there, but in the, actually, it gives the same translation in the fourth canto here. But in Prabhupada's purport to that particular verse here in the fourth canto, he gives a very nice, lengthy purport to that verse. And but his conclusion is, he says that by developing a loving desire for service of the lotus feet of the Lord, we subdue all material desires for sense gratification. So that's, you know, the recommendation there, that we have to try to develop a loving desire for devotional service to the lotus feet of the Lord. That, and that is the only way to subdue all material desires for sense gratification. And Prabhupada, just before that sentence, he gives the example of Yamunacharya, who was, as we know, was a great king. And but when he became a devotee, he was able to give up all his material desires. He became favorably engaged in devotional service, and he was able to give up all material desires. So much so that when he thought of sex life, he would spit at the thought. Prabhupada would say that. And Prabhupada says, and then Prabhupada quotes that verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Vishayava Nivartante Naha Harashadehina Rasavarjama Sopisha Panam Drishtra Nivartate, that the embodied soul may be restricted from sense gratification, but the taste remains. No, the inclination or the desire for it still remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he becomes fixed in consciousness. Param drishtra navartate. So we have to get that param drishtra, that higher taste, and that comes by pleasing the spiritual master. When we please the spiritual master, then Krishna is pleased. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada, yasya aprasada nagatit katopi. That by the mercy of the spiritual master, one gets the mercy of Krishna, and without the mercy of the spiritual master, one doesn't make any advancement. So we have to have that as our, certainly our top priority, possibly only priority. Prabhupada, as I said, is, you know, the greatest example of that, that he just, that was all he was interested in doing, is pleasing his spiritual master. You know, anything else we see that, you know, might have appeared that Prabhupada was interested in, it was all, it would, you know, it could, you could see it in relation to that. That was the, you know, the thing that was driving his life, to please his spiritual master by bringing this message to the, initially to the Western countries, and then eventually to the whole world. So probably be a good idea, once again, if we, you know, have that a serious ambition to become free from all material desires, to try to follow in his footsteps in that regard. And so some further insight on how to do that, and also this is what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada gives an example in this purport that I was just referring to. Of how this works, you know, how this whole, the dynamics of how to become free from these material desires. He gives this example, very interesting example, actually, of the rivers flowing into the ocean. I'll just read it. He says, it may be argued that the waves of a river are incessantly flowing and that they cannot be stopped. But the waves of that's comparable to the material desires. They're like the waves of the river. They're always flowing and they can't be stopped. It says, but the waves of the river flow towards the sea. When the tide comes over the river, it overwhelms the flowing of the river, and the river itself becomes overflooded, and the waves from the sea become more prominent than the waves from the river. See? So when I first read this, for years, I used to read this, and it would be a blank. I couldn't visualize it. I couldn't understand it. I'm from the Bronx. I was born and raised in New York City in the Bronx. The only river I ever saw was the Bronx River, which was kind of like one of these, like the L.A. River. It's basically just one of these, you know, sewerage things. So I had no conception. You know, I couldn't figure out what does it mean here? What is he talking about? But actually, by Krishna's mercy, by Prabhupada's mercy, I got personal realization of this example when I went to Australia. When I went to Australia, I was living mostly downtown in the city, but they did have a farm about 2 hours outside of Sydney on the Kolo River. And so, you know, we used to go out there for the weekend sometimes just to have a break. You know, we'd go out there for a couple of days and then go back to the city and do Sankirtan. So I remember one day, it was after the morning program, and you know, we used to see the river from the temple room, and you know, we'd be chanting our japa. You just couldn't help but notice. You'd look over, and there's the river flowing. And later on that morning, though, I was walking on the property, and I was, you know, doing something. And I walked, and I looked it down. It was down in a ravine there, and I looked at the river, and I said, "What? It looks like it's flowing in the opposite direction." And I thought, what's this? I couldn't, you know, so I thought, you know, I must be, nah, it can't be, you know. And then I waited, I didn't think. And then the next morning I looked again, and there it was flowing the other direction. And then I looked again later that morning, and it was flowing. Sure enough, I realized it wasn't going crazy. It wasn't my memory. It was flowing in the opposite direction. So I asked one of the local devotees, I said, "Hey, you know, you might, don't think I'm nuts or anything like that, but this river flows one way, and then later in the day it flows the other way." And then he explained to me, it was this. See, it was a river. The water was coming down from the mountains. So in the morning, it was, you know, a certain time of the day, it was flowing in a particular direction because the water was coming down off the, you know, from the hills there and going down towards the ocean. But then when the tide came in on the ocean, that was more powerful. And it actually reversed the direction of that river. And it was flowing in the opposite direction. So that's this analogy here. That's the example that Prabhupada's given. You see? It says here, it may be argued, the waves of a river are incessantly flowing and they cannot be stopped. But the waves of the river flow towards the sea. When the tide comes over the river, which that was what was happening, the tide came over the river, it overwhelms the flowing of the river. Okay? And the river itself becomes overflooded, and the waves from the sea become more prominent than the waves from the river. See, so similarly, when we are able to develop our devotional service, you know, as we cultivate our devotional service, our desire to serve and please our spiritual master and their lordship, Sri Sri Gaurantai, Rukmini Dwarkarish, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, will become, you know, more and more powerful. And just like is given in this example, it will overpower the material desires. So much so that they will become, those desires, those spiritual desires will be the desires that become prominent to the point of just completely making those other desires insignificant or non-existent. I mean, in the case of what I saw, the flow was actually reversed. So the waves of the river became insignificant or non-existent, because even if they were there, they weren't doing anything because the river was flowing in the opposite direction. So in that same way, you know. So practically speaking, what that means, and Prabhupada says it here, he says, similarly, a devotee with intelligence plans so many things for the service of the Lord and Krishna consciousness that stagnant material desires become overflooded by the desire to serve the Lord. So we have to have a plan. That's what Prabhupada's suggesting here, that we have to, each one of us, we have to make a plan. We have to use our intelligence, and a devotee with intelligence plans so many things for the service of the Lord. We have to have a plan of how we are going to favorably engage in devotional service in the short term and in the long run. You know, and then by meditating on that and by making, you know, accepting what's favorable and rejecting what's favorable to executing that plan that we have, you know, just like in companies, they have, you know, the 5-year plan and the 10-year plan and the 15, like that, then that's the process for overcoming or, you know, defeating these material desires and becoming established in just spiritual desire. So. And one last point was that but you know, to have the plan, it's not like it's a mechanical thing that just by, you know, filling up our day with devotional activities, you know, that is good, you know. But we really need the mercy, you know, because as I said, I've seen a lot of devotees who have been fully engaged, you know, with the body and possibly even with the mind, but you know, beyond the body, beyond the mind, beyond the intelligence. I mean, you could be engaging all those things. You actually have to get the mercy of the spiritual master and Krishna. So, you know, to that end, I think it's probably very important. The mood of how we engage in devotional service is also very important. You know, somebody could be fully engaged, but if they're offensive, you know, they don't have the right mood and how they're, you know, if they're not interacting with the other devotees in the right way or something, that's a pretty significant thing right there, then despite the fact that we're fully engaged, you know, we might not be able to get the desired result of getting that higher taste. It's a real science. It's an art. It's a science. It's, well, you know, it's the perfection of life if you can do it, to actually be able to get that palam drishtvan of artite. So it certainly does take at least being fully engaged in devotional service. But then, even in addition to that, there's a certain quality with which that has to be done. And when the combination of those factors are there, when the quantity is there, so to speak, when you're actually fully engaged, mind, body, words, etc., and in addition to that, you're doing it with the proper mood, you know, then Krishna's or the spiritual master is pleased by that, and you're blessed with that param drishtva navartate, that higher taste. And as a result of getting that higher taste, then we'll be able to become free from these material desires, which is a prerequisite for being fully admitted into the pure devotional service of the Lord. So I can't see the clock here, but that's much as I got to say, so I'll stop there and ask this here. Prema Sankirtan, any questions? What time is it anyway? Okay, that's good.
What a nice class, Prabhupada Prabhu. I have two questions. One is, can you explain a little bit more about this mood? Another one is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was, when he saw the form of the woman, wooden form, he was feeling agitated.
Huh? Wooden, the wooden woman.
No?
Finish.
I think I read like that, you know. And point is, he said, I feel agitation. And is it then he was saying just because he was playing the role of devotee and he won't give to us warning, or he was really feeling like that? Because, you know, he's Radha Krishna together and he's a little bit surprising and he can feel like that. So can you say for first...
Yeah, first question about more about the mood. I'm sorry, did I mean to interrupt you? Did you finish that second question? Yeah, I think so. Okay, so about the mood is, well, you know, I think like everybody should be happy with us as close as possible. I mean, you know, there should be like a mood of one big happy family. It's not that hard, you know? I mean, maybe I'm a bit naive because I go out on Sankirtan all day. I'm not around. But I think it's possible if we make it a high priority for ourselves, you know, in our mind, that we should try to have a nice relationship with everybody. Try for that. I think it's, and you know, a nice mood. Friendly, happy, you know, we like each other and we're happy to be in the association of each other, and you enjoy seeing the other devotees and you appreciate, like yesterday I was walking around and I was back yesterday and I experienced that a bit. I went into the kitchen to talk to Ratna Bhushan about something, and I was seeing how hard he was working getting the feast together, and there was Sri Sachi right next to him, you know. And then I saw Krishnapad doing something, and I went out there, and Mahanta was helping me, you know, with something with my motorhome, and Vijay was loading up his, and I was realizing, wow, you know, these are a bunch of sincere people. I mean, you know, these guys, they could be out doing something else, but they're doing this voluntarily. So I really appreciate it. Well, you know, I'm fortunate to have the association of some really sincere people, some sincere human beings, and, you know, so I just went over, and I said a couple nice words to Vijay. You know, I figured, I should try to appreciate the people, the good fortune I have of having such nice association, and express that, and just try to have a nice, you know, create a, like a nice friendly mood like that. So that's one big happy family. That's basically it. And on the second point, no, Lord Chaitanya wasn't. It was for our instruction. Lord Chaitanya wasn't agitated, of course. He was, you know, aside from being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was, you know, assuming playing the role of a, you know, an advanced pure devotee. So, but just for the instruction of the neophyte devotees, or the, you know, devotees on lower levels of devotional service, that he was, you know, making that statement.
Hare Krishna, thank you for very nice class, sharing your realizations. Just a minor correction. If I heard you correctly, you said that verse from the fourth canto, Yatpada Pankaja, that was Rishabdev preaching to his sons, but that's not.
No, that's Sanat Kumar.
Yeah, that's the Kumar is speaking to Priti Maharaj. On this other point about the mood, it has to be genuine. I mean, in other words, if you're not really feeling that higher taste that you were talking about, if you're not feeling that inner happiness, then you're not going to have it to share with others. So that's, we need to concentrate on that. In other words, if I'm not feeling happiness in my devotional service, then I need to solve that, because then I don't have anything to share. But in the meantime, even if you're not feeling that happiness, you can be respectful, you can be, you know, you don't have to be a meanie, a bad guy, you know what I'm saying? So it's a gradual thing. First, you have to come to that level of trying to see all living beings as spirit soul, and then you start trying to treat them that way. But to have the happy family that you're talking about, then you have to have happy individuals. Mm-hmm. And the happiness comes, it has to be genuine. It has to come from getting that higher taste of really surrendering to this process. Because that's when Krishna gives you that happiness. You can't fake it. You know, outside they're always faking it, taking this drug, going to that party. They're always chasing after the happiness externally. But we want that internal happiness that comes when Krishna is satisfied with you. And that you can't fake.
Yep. Good comment. Anybody else? Anything? Okay, thank you very much. Gunjaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.